All right, welcome everybody to another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a case that really digs into the world of labor law and how unions try to protect their members' jobs while navigating those legal boundaries, especially the limits on actions that might affect other businesses.
You hit the nail on the head. This is South Carolina State Ports Authority v. NLRB, a Fourth Circuit decision from 2023. It's a really fascinating case, especially for law students, because it shows how the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act, is grappling with the ever-changing landscape of new technologies and how those impact work. Basically, the court had to sort out whether the union was acting within its rights to protect its members' traditional jobs or if they crossed a line into what's known as an illegal secondary boycott.
So to set the stage, could you give us a rundown of the main players in this whole drama?
Absolutely. We've got the South Carolina State Ports Authority, or SCSPA, running the Port of Charleston. What makes this case interesting is their Leatherman Terminal, which opened back in 2021. They've got this hybrid labor model there.
Hybrid, huh?
Yeah.
What does that mean in this context?
It means they've got state employees running those massive cranes, but then members of the International Longshoremen's Association, the ILA, handling all the other tasks related to loading and unloading cargo.
Oh, so this is a mix of state and union workers. And naturally, the ILA, with their history of really fiercely defending their role in container work, probably had something to say about that.
They sure did. And this is where the U.S. Maritime Alliance, or USMX, comes in. They're essentially the bargaining representative for all the big shipping companies, and they have this big master contract with the ILA covering container work all along the East and Gulf coasts.
Okay, starting to see the conflict brewing here. So what was the specific trigger that sparked this whole legal battle?
Well, things got heated when a shipping carrier, one that was part of the USMX group, decided to use the Leatherman Terminal with that mixed labor model. This didn't sit well with the ILA. They saw it as a direct violation of their master contract, which essentially says that all container work in those regions should be done by union members.
Right. So the ILA's position was, hey, this agreement guarantees our members those jobs, and the port using this hybrid model is undermining that.
Precisely. And they didn't just sit back and complain. The ILA filed a lawsuit against USMX for a whopping $300 million in damages, alleging that USMX breached their contract by letting one of their carriers use the Leatherman Terminal.
Wow, that's a serious statement. So the ILA's lawsuit is essentially saying, USMX, you're responsible for ensuring that your carriers adhere to this agreement that guarantees us the container work.
Exactly. And that lawsuit, that huge potential liability, definitely got the attention of the shipping companies.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a carrier facing the risk of a $300 million judgment, you're going to be extremely cautious about where you dock your ships.
Yeah, totally understandable. And that's where the SCSPA really started to feel the impact of this whole dispute.
Right. With USMX carriers hesitant to use the Leatherman Terminal because of the lawsuit, the port started to feel the pinch. They weren't getting the business they had anticipated, and they weren't happy about it. So they decided to fight back, accusing the ILA of engaging in what they called illegal secondary activity under the NLRA.
Okay, so let's unpack that a bit. What exactly did the SCSPA mean by illegal secondary activity?
Their argument was that the ILA was essentially trying to punish them, the SCSPA, for using the hybrid labor model, but they were doing it indirectly by targeting the shipping companies through that lawsuit. The SCSPA saw themselves as a neutral third party in the dispute between the ILA and USMX. Their point was, the ILA's problem is with us and how we operate the terminal, but they're going after the shipping companies to try and force us to change our ways. And that kind of indirect pressure, using one business to harm another in a labor dispute, is what's known as a secondary boycott, and it's prohibited under the NLRA.
So the SCSPA is claiming the ILA's lawsuit isn't really about enforcing their contract, but rather a tactic to hurt the port indirectly by scaring off business.
Right, that was their stance. But the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, the agency that handles all this labor stuff, didn't buy it. They actually dismissed the SCSPA's complaint. They said the ILA's actions were primarily about preserving work traditionally done by their members, not about illegally targeting a neutral third party.
Interesting. So even though the ILA's actions had this ripple effect that hurt the port's business, the NLRB essentially said they were within their rights to protect their members' jobs.
That's the gist of it. Now, the SCSPA wasn't satisfied with that decision. They appealed the NLRB's ruling to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's where things really get interesting legally.
Okay, so we've got a classic labor law showdown heading to court. What were the big legal questions that the Fourth Circuit had to wrestle with?
They had two major issues to decide. First, they had to determine whether a specific section of the ILA's master contract with USMX Section 7B violated the NLRA's prohibition on hot cargo agreements. These are agreements where an employer basically promises not to do business with another employer because of a labor dispute. In this case, the question was whether Section 7B effectively said USMS carriers can't use ports that don't have an all-ILA workforce for container work.
So the SCSPA was arguing that the master contract itself was problematic because it was essentially designed to force shipping companies to boycott ports that didn't meet the ILA's labor demands.
Exactly. And if the court had agreed that Section 7B amounted to an illegal hot cargo agreement, it would have been a big win for the SCSPA and a major setback for the ILA.
Got it. So how did the court rule on this hot cargo issue?
The Fourth Circuit really dug into the specific language of Section 7B, and they concluded that it didn't actually require USMX to boycott ports like the Leatherman Terminal. The court found that the clause simply required USMX to notify ports about potential work stoppages that might occur if a hybrid labor model was being used. They said it wasn't a blanket ban on using such ports, more like a heads up about potential issues.
Oh, I see. So the difference is between saying you absolutely can't use these ports, which would be a hot cargo violation, and saying, just so you know, if you use these ports, there might be some labor-related disruptions, which isn't necessarily illegal.
Exactly. It's all about the nuance of the language and the intent behind it. The court said it wasn't about forcing a boycott, but rather about ensuring transparency and communication.
Okay, that makes sense. So the SCSPA's first argument didn't succeed. What was the other big legal question the court had to grapple with?
The second big question was whether the ILA's lawsuit against USMX was essentially an attempt to strong-arm USMX into cutting off business with the SCSPA, which would be a violation of Section 8B4 of the NLRA. That's the section about secondary boycotts.
Right. So the court had to determine if the ILA was going after their contractual partner, USMX, as the primary target, or if the SCSPA was the real target, with USMX just caught in the crossfire.
Exactly. And to do this, they relied heavily on this concept called the Work Preservation Doctrine, which comes from a Supreme Court case, NLRB v. ILA, back in 1980.
Oh, interesting. What's the Work Preservation Doctrine all about?
It basically acknowledges that unions have a legitimate right to put pressure on their direct employers to protect work that has historically been done by their members. Unions can fight to keep the jobs they've traditionally held. But that right isn't unlimited. Unions can't go after neutral third parties with the goal of forcing those third parties to stop doing business with the employer they have a dispute with.
Okay, so it's all about keeping the pressure focused on the direct employer-employee relationship. You can fight for your jobs, but you can't drag other uninvolved businesses into the fight.
Exactly. So in this case, the court had to figure out if the ILA's lawsuit against USMX was legitimate primary activity, meaning it was aimed at their direct contractual partner, or if it was actually a disguised secondary boycott with the SCSPA as the real target.
And what did they decide? Was it a lawful primary action or an illegal secondary boycott?
The Fourth Circuit ultimately ruled that the ILA's lawsuit was legitimate primary activity. They said the ILA's main goal was to protect their members' historical right to container work along the East and Gulf Coasts, a right that was spelled out in their master contract with USMX. They felt that the hybrid labor model at the Leatherman Terminal was a direct threat to that long-standing jurisdiction over container work.
So the court was persuaded that the ILA was genuinely trying to protect its turf, so to speak, and that the lawsuit was a valid way to enforce their contractual rights against USMX.
That's right. And the court also made a point of saying that just because the lawsuit had a negative impact on the SCSPA's business, that didn't automatically make it an illegal secondary boycott. They viewed that harm to the port as an incidental side effect of the ILA pursuing its legitimate work preservation goals.
Okay. That makes sense. They're saying, look, sometimes actions taken in a labor dispute are going to have consequences for other businesses, but that doesn't mean those actions are automatically illegal. It depends on the primary target and intent.
Exactly. And to really solidify their reasoning, the court applied a two-part test to determine whether the ILA's actions qualified as lawful work preservation.
A two-part test. Could you walk us through those two prongs?
Sure. The first part of the test was whether the ILA's activity was aimed at preserving work that was traditionally done by their members. In this case, they found that, yeah, handling shipping containers had historically been under the ILA's control in those regions, as evidenced by their master contract. That part was pretty straightforward.
Makes sense. So they're checking if the union is genuinely trying to hold onto something they already had, not trying to muscle their way into a new area. What was the second part of the test?
The second part is often called the right of control test. The court looks at whether the employer being pressured, in this case USMX, actually has the authority to assign the work in question. Here, they pointed out that the USMX carriers could decide which ports they wanted to use. They weren't obligated to use the Leatherman terminal. So USMX had the power to direct that container work to ports that exclusively employed ILA labor if they wanted to.
So it's not enough for the union to say, this work should be ours. The employer they're pressuring also has to have the ability to actually give them that work.
Precisely. It has to be within the employer's control. And because the Fourth Circuit found that both prongs of the test were met, they concluded that the ILA's lawsuit was a legitimate attempt to protect their traditional work, not some sneaky attempt to harm the SCSPA.
Okay, so it sounds like a pretty clear victory for the ILA, and a confirmation that unions have some legal muscle to protect their members' jobs, even if it means ruffling some feathers along the way.
That's one way to look at it. But it's important to note that this wasn't a unanimous decision by the Fourth Circuit panel. One of the judges, Judge Niemeyer, filed a dissenting opinion, meaning he disagreed with the majority's ruling.
Interesting. What was Judge Niemeyer's take on the case?
He had a very different perspective on the ILA's motivations. He argued that they weren't really trying to preserve existing work, but were actually trying to expand their control into a new area, the Leatherman Terminal, where they hadn't historically had complete control. He saw the lawsuit as a tactic to scare off shipping companies from using the terminal because of its hybrid labor model.
So he's basically saying the ILA was overreaching, trying to claim work that wasn't traditionally theirs, and using the lawsuit as a weapon to pressure the SCSPA.
That's his argument in a nutshell. He felt the majority was giving unions too much leeway to disrupt business through lawsuits, even if those lawsuits weren't technically secondary boycotts.
Okay, so we've got this split within the court, with the majority saying the ILA's actions were protected and the dissent saying they went too far. That really highlights the complexity of these labor law issues, doesn't it?
It definitely does. And I think it also points to this ongoing tension between the rights of unions to protect their members' jobs and the need for businesses to adapt and innovate in response to changing technologies and economic pressures.
Absolutely. And this case, with its focus on port operations and that master contract explicitly aimed at preserving jobs against the steadily dwindling volume of cargo work, feels like a microcosm of that larger struggle playing out across so many industries.
I totally agree. This case isn't just about one union and one port. It's a glimpse into how labor law is trying to find its footing in this rapidly evolving landscape where technology is reshaping jobs and traditional ways of working.
So for law students trying to wrap their heads around this case, what are the key takeaways, the big picture lessons?
I think the biggest takeaway is that unions do have significant power under the NLRA to protect their members' traditional work, even if it has some negative consequences for other businesses. But the case also highlights the crucial and often very subtle difference between lawful primary activity, which is protected, and unlawful secondary activity, which is not.
And as we've seen, the key to understanding that distinction is often about determining the union's true intent, and whether the employer they're pressuring actually have the ability to give them what they want.
Absolutely. And I think this case should also serve as a reminder to law students that labor law is a dynamic field that's constantly evolving as technology reshapes our economy and the workplace. We're likely to see many more cases like this as unions try to navigate this changing landscape.
So to wrap things up, the Fourth Circuit ultimately upheld the NLRB's decision, saying the ILA's actions, including that big lawsuit, were legitimate efforts to protect their traditional work, not an illegal attempt to pressure the SCSPA.
That's the bottom line. But the dissenting opinion reminds us that this isn't always a black and white issue. There is a lot of gray area in these cases, and the courts have to make tough calls about where to draw the line between protecting workers' rights and preventing unfair harm to other businesses.
For sure. And it leaves us with this really important question to think about. How do we as a society balance the need for innovation and efficiency with the need to protect workers and their livelihoods? It's a question that's not going away anytime soon.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. It's a complex issue with no easy answers, but hopefully this deep dive has given our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there, a better understanding of how the laws is grappling with these challenges.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for taking the time to break it all down for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to all our listeners, thanks for joining us on another deep dive. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.